Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. Progressive News Network once again brings you the latest from Forest.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come, and I'll tell you why. There's a better world to come, and don't you see? When we'll all be union, and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come, and don't you see?
And once again, we want to welcome you on behalf of myself, Rick Spezak, News Director and co-producer, along with our co-producer, Mickey Royce. Also want to thank our sponsors, Imagineering Productions, full-service multimedia company, and Media Goddess Worldwide, your best in PR and media services. Okay, couple news items we have to go with. Number one, Occupy has been under attack all weekend long. Portland, all over the United States, Occupy is on under attack. But that's okay. The 99%ers are standing tall. A couple other stories you've probably heard out. The XL pipeline decision by the president, we've all long awaited. Well, once again, the president has punted. He's going to postpone any decision until 2013, and maybe that hot potato landed in somebody else's lap. Or maybe he'll actually be able to, you know, do what he said and protect the environment. Wouldn't that be nice? Also want to bring to your attention this story from Chris Spilotis. He said his niece is a master's level elementary school teacher for 5 years in Georgia, but she just can't take it anymore. There's data-driven discussions, standards plastered all over her classroom walls, 5 pages of lesson plans per subject each week, no raises over the duration of her tenure. Basically, she has said they're taking the joy out of teaching. Also, another story that's hot right now, it's called Super Collusion. It seems the president has been putting pressure on the so-called super committee, you know, where Congress has abrogated its own responsibilities to stand up and make the right decision. It seems the president is reported in 2 widely different sources, both the Washington Post and the Huffington Post. The president is reported to be pressuring them to make big cuts in, let's see, 2 new reports suggest the president and congressional Democrats are about to betray everything Democrats once stood for. Under pressure from Barack Obama, Democrats on the Super Committee have sketched out an appalling compromise proposal that would certainly doom both their 2012 election chances and his own. They all have it coming. The draft plan literally takes the crutches away from poor people to protect tax breaks for the wealthy. The president is actively pressuring Super Committee members from both parties to come up with a budget-slashing deal, according to reports in both the Washington Post and the Huffington Post. Obama has also urged them not to cancel the automatic $1.2 trillion in cuts that would be triggered under current law if they fail to make an agreement. And another story from the Washington Post, Sam Stein, details were given on Democrats' latest proposed compromise. The 2 stories paint the picture of a president and a party who are willing to keep taxes low for the wealthy and would pay for it by imposing cuts that would punish seniors, doctors, and the poor. Why? So they can see they successfully governed with extremist Republicans and compromise to please international markets and reality cares. The president can campaign as above left right as if the differences in principle are a bad thing because they've been spiritually suffocated by the cultural norms of Washington. You be the judge, ladies and gentlemen. You, the taxpayers. Obviously, one person isn't listening. They've got your minions listening. Oh, and by the way, another interesting story. You know, Marie Antoinette was said to have had her idea of what diet the poor should be having. Michelle Bachmann's got an idea. She yesterday said to the Family Research Council that after vowing to weaken social safety net programs such as Social Security, Medicare, food stamps, unemployment benefits, Bachman said that if you're currently not working, you should not be eating. Our nation needs to stop doing for people what they can and should do for themselves, she said. Self-reliance means if you can't work, you can't eat. Another very interesting story. It seems that Occupy has come to the diplomatic circles. In Honolulu, the president's hosting the Pacific Rim leaders, and they had hired a local popular Hawaiian recording artist, a guy named Makana. And at his singing, he opened with a tune called Occupy with Aloha. We are the many. The song featured a refrain, we'll occupy the streets, we'll occupy the courts, we'll occupy the offices of you till you do the bidding of the many, not the few. He sang it over and over again for 40 minutes. Isn't that nice? So that's Occupy Diplomacy. Well, let's see. We've got our first guest here. Tonight, we've got Kelsey Crane, President Mission Green Student Association from FAU. We've got Shelley Rogers, a documentarian. We've got Rob Absentplan, a regular guest. We've got Kit Rafferty of Jobs with us. So let's, without any further ado, I think we've got Kelsey Crane.
Hi.
Hi, Kelsey. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you?
Very good. Very good. So tell us a little about the Green Students Association.
Yeah, we started a few years ago on campus. I started at FAU in 2008, and I was looking to get involved in, you know, an environmental group on campus. I went looking for it, and I found a group that was really all about promoting awareness and education on campus, and I really wanted to get more politically active than that and start reaching out to our, you know, local officials and start making a difference and get involved in some real action. And I started pushing the group to do that, and it didn't really happen. I became president this last summer, and we've really gotten very involved and done some awesome actions with 350.org and other organizations, and it's been great.
That's fantastic. So, you know, one of the questions that I always ask my activist guest, Kelsey, is, you know, it's hard enough just to be a regular citizen. It's hard enough to make a living. It's hard enough to live a life, hard enough to go to college. But there's something in the progressive spirit. There's something in the activist that says, you know, that's not enough. What was it for you? What took you from being just another citizen consumer to a citizen activist?
I just see all of the crazy decisions that our politicians make, repealing different environmental standards and allowing certain things like the Keystone Pipeline, which hopefully will actually be killed with this latest review. But just things like that going on and not being able to sit by and let them happen and really wanting to get out there and voice my opinion, because this generation is huge and we can get out there and voice what we want and actually make some changes, hopefully.
You know, I am a confirmed optimist, and I'm always ready to call that glass half full. But, you know, when I hear people say that the postponement of the decision till 2013 is a victory, now it sounds to me like the opponent left the field temporarily. It doesn't really sound like a victory to me. How does it sound to you?
You know, there's in no way we're saving the environment with this delay of the Keystone Pipeline. There's so many, you know, examples and other, you know, Keystone-like pipelines and other decisions out there that, you know, may end up going through. You know, in no way this makes all the problems go away. But to know that 6 months ago, the people behind this pipeline and TransCanada and all the other companies considered this a done deal. And with some really good organizing, this is now possibly not going to happen at all. It's really good to just feel like that some good organizing and getting our message out there can actually have some influence, because I've seen so many examples in just my few short years of organizing where decisions did not go in our way. Recently with the nuclear decisions and allowing the PSC to give that money to FPL, to Progress Energy, for those new nuclear reactors. We lost in that decision, but hopefully we can, you know, keep up the momentum that we built with Keystone and actually have more victories and things go our way, which hopefully this will end up actually killing the whole pipeline entirely. But we're all waiting to see what actually happens with this decision. It's not a guarantee.
Well, that's a good idea, and that's a good way to look at it, Kelsey. I really applaud you for that. Let me ask you this. Obviously, in Florida here, we have so many different environmental issues, whether you look at the Gulf, whether you look at water quality, when you look at the decimation of wildlife, when you look at the proliferation of and evidently the free reign that nuclear power has here. And the curiosity that the Sunshine State has almost no investment in solar power to speak of. What focus are you making with the students who come to you for information? Is there one particular area or a couple of areas that you focus on, or are you trying to help them understand the whole picture?
With my student group at FAU with Mission Green, we're looking at getting the campus to sign on to more sustainable standards and really improving the campus. And outside of that, I do a lot of work with this organization called the Florida Yes Coalition, and it's a statewide organization of different universities, and we do some really awesome statewide campaigns. But on our campus, we're really looking to get some better standards in our cafeteria, and we're just getting a community garden started. It's definitely hard to be active in so many different issues that are going on in Florida, but I just try to encourage them to be aware of everything that's going on, stay involved in the environmental news, know what political decisions are being made, and you know, picking our battles and seeing where we can get involved and get the youth voice in these issues, and pick certain things that we can make progress on.
Oh, that's great. Let me ask you this: is FAU, is it both a residential and a commuter college, or is it primarily a commuter college?
When I started there, it was really just a commuter school, and they have built up some dorms on campus, and they're trying to, they call it, change the culture of the campus and expand the university and make it much more of a residential, you know, destination school. And they've been successful at that, but, you know, at the expense of our preserve on campus, which happens with a lot of development. They've cleared sections of our preserve to build our stadium, which is right next to some new dorms. And, you know, that development might continue, but we're trying to see exactly what direction the campus is going in.
Well, that's great. Let me ask you, do you do some nature trips and that sort of thing to kind of acquaint people? You know, Florida has such a funny face, you know, with it being so warm in the summertime, a lot of people don't get that at all. And some people only know Florida's wildlife from the beach. Some people don't know its inland waters and its canals and its, you know, kind of the inland area. Do you do some nature trips like, say, the Sierra Club does? Or do you partner with some of those groups?
I'm definitely looking to do things like that. I've heard from so many different groups since becoming president of the organization, from Arthur Marshall Foundation and the Sierra Club and the Greenpeace Student Network, who all want to get involved. We have an awesome nature trail that was just completed in our preserve on campus, and we're trying to get students out there to really appreciate it, because the preserve doesn't have federal protection. If the campus wanted to, they could come in and they could clear it tomorrow and build whatever they wanted there. So we're trying to really build appreciation for it and get some genuine protection for it. So we try to get students out and really enjoy the nature that's on our own campus, because we're lucky to have the preserve that's at the size that we currently do.
That's excellent. That's excellent. Get them familiar with the local environs, and maybe they'll appreciate it a little more, right?
It's a great way. It's a, you know, living classroom right on our campus. We can get out there and we can show them, you know, why, show pictures of scrubs and oak hammocks in your classroom when you can take your students out there and show it to them and show them what it actually looks like and how, you know, it's right here in our backyard.
Very good. Very good. If there are people out there who want to help out or get involved with your Mission Green group, is there a website? Do you guys have a Facebook site?
Yeah, our website is www.fau.edu/mgsa. And on that website, there's a contact us link that has our Facebook, and there's a board page that has my email, and there's a lot of info on there to get in contact with us and get involved.
Could you give that one more time?
Yeah, fau.edu/mgsa.
Okay, great. That's fantastic. If you'd like, drop me a note, and I can help you get in touch with some of the groups that you might not have heard of yet. They're doing good work. There's a wonderful GM Foods group in the area, and of course you know all the major players, the CEO Club and all that. But some of these people might have some interesting presentations for you. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'd love to have you back again. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, you have a good day, Kelsey. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
Okay, next up, we've got probably Shelley Rogers, documentarian. Let me see here. Hello, Shelley, is that you?
Yes.
Hi, Shelley. Welcome to Progressive News Network. How are you tonight?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure. So I always ask my guests to tell us a little bit about yourself. What got you involved in environmental issues? What got you involved in documentary making?
Right. Well, I was actually always interested in environmental issues, and I ended up, well, it's kind of, you know, as everything is, it can be a little bit of a convoluted story. Basically, I, you know, was always had a passion for environmental issues, and my growing up, my mom was a nutritionist, and so food was always, you know, important part of my life. We grew our own food and cooked at home, and then, you know, I worked in restaurants throughout my schooling, and at one of the restaurants I was cooking, and I ended up, you know, my second day on the job at a fairly fancy restaurant, I got a box of zucchini to wash it and chop it up, and the head chef came over to me and said, you know, what are you doing? And I said, I'm washing zucchini, and he said, stop, we don't have time for that. And I, you know, I was a little appalled, and, you know, my wheels started turning, and, you know, you work enough crappy jobs for long enough, and you think, okay, well, what's the next thing, you know, and so I knew that I wanted to go to graduate school. So I applied, and I went to NYU in their Department of Media, Culture, and Communication. And it wasn't a production type of a program, but it was flexible enough that I could take courses in the film school. And so I ended up taking a class my second semester called Socially Relevant Documentary Production with a professor who, in his 90s. Named George Stoney, who, you know, has been making films since the 30s, and he's just a really incredible teacher, and that class changed my life. And so that's where I started the film that I ultimately made.
Well, you know, we've all heard that Hollywood aphorism, if you want a message, get a telegram. But I think a lot of us are very much informed by the idea that some film can have a tremendously educational component to it, as well as a good narrative storyline. I'm always intrigued by that story that explains how someone became more than just a consumer, more than just a citizen, but an activist. So obviously your teacher played a part of that, kind of setting your internal activist free. Tell us about some of the films you've done.
Well, I've made two so far. So the first one was a feature documentary called What's Organic About Organic, and I just finished that about 2 years ago, approximately, and it took about 5 years to make. So So that one was the biggest project thus far. And then I've completed another one called the Rye Bread Project, and it's actually available online to watch right now. It's on a website called theryebreadproject.org, and it was a commissioned piece and a collaborative piece that we did. It was an event. The Rye Bread Project itself is an event that happened last November in New York City with several collaborators, one of which was the Danish consulate, the New Amsterdam Market, and a friend of mine who runs an organization called the Green Rabbits, and a chef from Denmark who came over. And it was all about using Nordic rye bread and the traditional sandwich that's made in Denmark called the smørrebrød as a lens or a discussion piece to talk about local regional food systems, the importance of public markets, and cultural food exchange.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued.
I have a few other projects in various stages, but nothing quite available yet.
Well, I'm very intrigued by the title, What's Organic About Organic? Now, is this about how pesticides are very hard to separate from the food system? Or give us some idea. What is the title? What's the title telling us?
Well, it's an open question. And so to me, you know, there's a lot of power in an open question, you know, that, you know, you may not know the answer to it and you may never know the answer to it, but it's important to ask questions, and sometimes questions lead to more questions. And so that's exactly what I hope that people take away from it, is the tools to start to answer the right questions. And so it's about organic agriculture and why we should care. So obviously there's a great distinction between, you know, organic production systems and conventional production systems. And, you know, but a lot of people, you know, they like the idea or the notion of organic production, but they don't really know what it's about. And so I think it's important that we not only value it in terms of our own bodies and our, you know, feeding our families with the best stuff, but, you know, it's not just about my body or your body. It's about everybody's body and the planet. And so, you know, that's why I felt like it was an important film to make.
A lot of people who have eaten organic or have tried to eat organic for a long time are kind of surprised when the government seems to be stepping in recently and preventing people from eating raw milk or preventing people from growing organic crops or raising their own crops. How do you feel about that sort of regulation or that sort of governmental interference?
Well, I'm not totally sure exactly what you're talking about. I think you might be talking about the food safety regulations, which are separate from organic, although they do affect the organic marketplace. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, just recently there's been some organic growers, some stores out west, especially I think Colorado, California, where farmers have been prevented from selling whole milk, unpasteurized milk.
Right. But that's different than the growing of organic vegetables.
Certainly it is. But I think for many people, it's all connected in their mind that they want to eat locally, they want to eat organic if at all possible. We all know, anybody who pays attention, that what is labeled organic and what is in fact organic can be two quite different things. And
I would argue that you know, at this point, the organic regulation is federally regulated. So it means that, you know, it's the same rule across the board for any producers anywhere in our country, and then any product that's coming into our country has to meet the USDA organic standard. So, you know, I think, you know, it's certainly an arguable point, but I do think that we have benefited greatly from it being a government regulation, and indeed the community wanted it to become government regulation. So, you know, I think, you know, there are some farmers who use organic practices who don't need the label. They don't need the certification because they, you know, sell at the farmer's market or sell to restaurants, and they have a relationship with their citizen consumers, and so they don't need that seal of approval to tell their story. But you know, I think that there's value in being able to understand something, a label, when you see it, and certainly it's the highest environmental food label that exists thus far, and it's a public label. And so because it's run by the government, we all have a stake in it. So I think that it's important to keep it in perspective.
Oh absolutely. I'm in no way opposed to food regulation, but
mm-hmm.
I can see where, you know, where regulation can rub the wrong way. And certainly
yeah.
food safety is very important. But I think if a consumer wants to use, say, whole milk, fresh
mm-hmm.
milk, whatever you want to call it, unpasteurized, I think people should have the right
yeah.
to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I agree. I think that the reason that the standards came into place, or the regulations came into place regarding milk specifically, or raw dairy products, is to keep people safe. And, you know, there's plenty of arguments to make about how it keeps people, you know, keeps small producers at a disadvantage. But, you know, I think there are innovative ways that people are organizing to subvert those regulations. And so one of them is by, you know, buying a share of a cow, almost treating a dairy like a community-supported agriculture proposition, where you're, you know, basically owning a part of the farm, but not, you know, that way you get your subscription every week of, you know, a box of fresh vegetables. And so, but in this case, you own a share of the cow, and so you get your gallon of raw milk every week. So
The only thing that would worry me there is invariably probably Wall Street would get involved, and they would bet that the cow might die, and then
you'd start trading shares of bets
right.
of whether or not the cow would die or not. you know, I think that I don't know if there's an answer to it, but there are farmers and citizen groups that are getting together to try to provide different means points of access for people who want to sell these products and people who want to consume these products. So, you know, I think that we can manage subverting the regulations for now. You know, I don't know if that regulation will ever change, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you'll forgive my sense of humor busting in there. I can only be so serious for so long, and then I have to cut up a little bit. What projects are you working on right now?
Pardon me?
What projects are you working on right now?
Well, I'm working on one about how people understand fairness in the food system, food labels that try to convey, you know, how farmers and farm workers are treated in the process of making food. So that's an interesting one. It's a collaboration with an organization called Florida Organic Growers here in Gainesville. And then I'm working on another one. It's a short about a woman in upstate New York named Joan Gussow. She's a nutritionist, and she's considered to be one of the mothers, matriarchs of the field to fork movement. And she has been very influential on people like Michael Pollan. If you've read any of his books, you can, you know, she's cited in them and referred to. And she's, you know, somebody who I think is really tells a great story, in that, you know, she really lives what she believes. And she grows all of her own vegetables in her backyard garden and year round. So she lives, you know, just north of New York City. So, you know, she's a pretty incredible, intrepid woman, and she's in her 80s, and she's still, you know, living her beliefs and really committed to them.
Wow, that sounds very interesting. Do you shoot in film or digital?
Digital.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm currently editing a video of a progressive caucus meeting that occurred in Orlando a few weeks back. It's part of my own documentary work is to illustrate and to help provide dissemination of the discussions as we reclaim our democracy. I think it's really important that the progressive activists who are in this right now are understood, and we understand these dialogues that are involved in how we fully reinvent democracy, because I'm afraid that for too long our democracy has been in the hands of those who have forgotten who they work for. Well,
right.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
If people want to follow up with you and check out more of your work, so the ryebreadproject.org is one of them.
Right.
Do you anticipate putting the other piece up online, or you distribute that?
I do. You know, right now there's a two-minute trailer that people can watch on the website, which is www.whatsorganicmovie.com. And so you can watch the trailer. Right now we are focusing on community screenings, but and so, you know, people can purchase a public license for a group as small as 30 or under, or, you know, 100 or more. So
okay.
we partner with the audience to show the film. And
so
then,
pardon me? I just wanted to read you back that web address. whatsorganicmovie.org?
.com.
Oh, .com. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then, that's basically it. And it's, at some point, I am looking into distributing the film online as a streaming rental or a download purchase. So
great.
That will be coming in the next 6 months.
Well, super. That's fantastic. Thank you so very much for joining us. And
thanks so
maybe
much.
We should get down here for a screening or something.
That'd be fun.
Okay. Take care. Thanks again.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, we should have Rob Abson with us in just a minute. Meanwhile, I want to read you a response to the letter to the editor. Once again, in the Stewart News, the Republican trolls are out, and they were decrying the Occupy movement as a bunch of spoiled brats getting together. And about three in a row asked the question of what's Occupy? What is it? Is it just lazy people getting together and camping out? So I wrote this little response. Why Occupy? If you're among the people not quite sure why the Occupy movement has taken to the public square, here's a couple hints. They're trying to get the attention of their servants in government. They refuse to suffer and die silently. They refuse to have their jobs, their lives, their homes, and the chance of an education stolen. They are not being heard. There were more people opposed to the Iraq and Afghanistan wars than ever opposed to the Vietnam War debacle. And yet, the response of our representatives in government, the response of the public servants, they weren't listening. They were rolled by the deceitful Bush administration. And despite evidence to the contrary, they sent our military and thousands of mercenaries and billions of dollars off war. They provided a deaf ear when the public demanded peace. When the Bush administration hijacked the U.S. Treasury to bail out their pals on Wall Street and over a weekend, demanded a blank check to protect the American economy, did our public servants act to protect the public? Or did they think only of the people who pay for the lobbyists to decorate the halls of Congress and pass out those sheets of $1,000 bills? They protected only the revolving door boys. They protected Wall Street. Did our public servants in Congress demand that there be no profits taken from our generous gift of tax dollars? No. The cash flowed and flowed and flowed, and those bonuses grew and grew and ballooned. And when Professor Elizabeth Warren said we must protect the public, we must have transparency, when she dared to suggest that the bankers must pay, well, Congress and the president served the bankers first, and they locked her out, and they locked us out too. Big media ignored the real issues. Our public servants in Congress ignored the real issues. The people guaranteed by our Constitution to the right to peacefully assemble, to demand redress of grievance, and they're doing just that. They gathered across the country and across the world to say, it ends here. These patriots gathered because they refused to be ignored. Union, environmental activists, human rights activists, economic justice activists, small business men and women, students and just plain folks have gathered in the public square to demand the government protect them. Not just protect the banks, not just protect the big corporations. The American people government exists to protect the interests of the people, not just corporate power and the 1%. Is it fair that small business and family are paying their fair share taxes? GE pays nothing and gets a rebate? Is it fair that companies enjoy tax incentives to steal American jobs and send them overseas? And unlike the weak Tea Party, the occupiers didn't bring their guns to this democratic event. Occupy is about economic justice and fair play for the American people. That's what it's about. Occupy. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we've got Kit Rafferty. Hi, this is Kit.
This is Kit. Hi, how are you?
Very good, Kit. How about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. We did a great workshop down at Occupy Miami the other day on the Wake Up Walmart campaign and respect for Walmart associates, and it was really well received.
Do you mean to suggest that Walmart workers have rights too?
Well, the company doesn't think they do, but we think they do. So the United
Food and
Grocery
Workers... when they get locked in overnight with no pay?
Yeah. The United Food and Commercial Workers are trying to make a difference with their Respect the Associates campaign.
Yeah, these aren't just regular workers. These are associates. Doesn't that sound better when you cash that paltry little excuse for a check?
Or when they raise your health care premiums when you're only making $7 an hour and your health care premiums go up to $100 every 2 weeks, that's when you wonder if the term associate, what it really means.
You know, kid, I don't understand. I don't understand why Walmart employees complain. I mean, after all, Walmart's going to get into the medical business. Doesn't that give us all a ray of hope?
That is a scary thought. That is a really scary thought.
This way they can self-insure their own employees, double their money, and still pay nothing.
Yep, that's their plan. That's their business plan.
Well, you know, I had already disliked Walmart for so many business practices, but when I heard about them cashing in on those dead peasant policies, that was the one that I could not deal with. That was the one that was just too much for me.
Yeah, no, I mean it's really an awful place to work. They told a story about an associate that was locked in a freezer all night and died.
Oh my God, where
was
that?
Yeah, no, I think it was someplace in Texas, but I'm not sure.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So
no,
what else is new with Occupy Miami?
Well, Occupy Miami is going really well. You know, they lost their permit to be in the place that they were, but they're still in front of County Hall. They just had to move over one space, and that permit is probably going to last for 2 or 3 weeks. Mohammed Malik, who's the organizer there for them, has been up with a group of the occupiers to negotiate terms of the permit. So we'll see. They'll know in about 3 weeks.
Wow. That's
but otherwise,
great.
They haven't really bothered these folks because they pretty much left them alone.
That's
and,
super.
So it's
so.
Been,
what else is new down there with the good things that you're doing?
We have our big action coming. Excuse me, I have a cold. We have our big action coming up on November the 17th. And this is a huge action. We should have hopefully over 1,000 activists who are going
wow.
to march from Jose Marti Park at 351 Southwest 4th Street, 33231. to the banking district and tell the bankers that we're tired of them getting bailed out when, you know, banks got bailed out, we got sold out.
Yep.
And, you know, and we're going to ask for jobs and jobs to come back to Miami, decent jobs with good health care, good pay and good health care. We're going to demand that.
Excellent.
And this is a big action. We've forged a successful coalition really to defeat the corporate agenda and the corporate attack on working people. And it's the unions, it's labor, it's community, it's all different ethnic groups. We're going to have some great bands there, some Haitian bands, some Spanish bands, and it's going to be, not only is it going to be fun, but we're going to send a message to our politicians in Washington and to the banks that we're sick and tired of having no decent jobs here in Miami.
Miami's unemployment rate is very high, I understand.
It's exceptionally high. It's exceptionally high. And there are so many things that could be done. If the jobs bill would pass, they could fix the infrastructure in the schools. The schools are all crumbling. Our bridges are crumbling. Our highways are crumbling. And we need to put people back to work on these good jobs that pay well and have good benefits.
Absolutely. So, I meant to ask last time you were on, and I didn't get a chance because we were sort of rushed. But, you know, Kit, I always like to ask my activist friends and guests, what was it in your life that took you from being just another consumer, just another citizen, to a citizen who really decided to take responsibility, decided to act and became an activist? What was it that threw that switch for you? Could you talk about yourself for a minute?
Sure, I'd be happy to. There were several things. I mean, I grew up in the middle of the civil rights movement, so that was a really seminal moment for me. You could just see the complete unfairness in the way people not being able to vote because of the color of their skin, not being able to go into a library because of the color of their skin. That was a big seminal moment for me. But then moving on, I was very active in my union at Eastern Airlines when Frank Lorenzo took over, and that was truly, he had a corporate agenda, and that was to get rid of quality employees who kept that airline running, completely disrespectful of how we built that airline and how we made it run. And so I was one of the Eastern strikers.
Good for you. Good for you. So that's when you decided you were going to start making a difference in this world, not just being a watcher?
Yeah, well, I was very active in my union and very activist in my union, but this really was the turning point for me, recognizing that the corporate agenda and the treating people completely disrespectfully, people who had built a company. I mean, we built Eastern Airlines, and this person didn't care. He just wanted to sell it off piece by piece and forget about it. You don't need a job.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your organization, Jobs with Justice.
It was founded in 1999. And we have been very active in many things. One of the things is affordable housing. And, of course, we have always been active on the jobs front, and particularly with the unions. Right now, we're very active in saving Jackson Memorial Hospital, which is the big public hospital down here.
How's that coming?
It's sort of the commission decided not to do anything about privatizing it, so that was a good thing. But they're in negotiations, and there are some real tough negotiations going on. They want people to take 2 weeks unpaid leave, and all of the three union leaders out there said, no, we're not going to do that. So we'll see. It's a tough fight. And then
is this part of that whole privatization concept?
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea that they think that private companies can do it better because somebody's brother-in-law would like to have a business. I mean, It's just Jackson has been running very well. Unfortunately, they don't know how to. They don't have a up-to-date billing system, so there are a lot more problems in the labor costs there. The labor costs are probably the same as they are at most hospitals around here. So.
Okay, that sounds good. And so on the 17th of November.
The 17th of November.
So that's this Thursday.
The website is onemiaminow.org, and we hope everybody will join us. We yesterday making some great signs about how we want jobs, and banks got bailed out, and we got sold out, and we are the 99%, and we want to go back to work again.
Yeah, I've had the good fortune of having Jose Suarez on a couple times.
Okay, great.
From Miami. Great, activist.
Right. We have some great activists down here. We really do.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I consider myself a native son of Miami. I spent 40 years there, and I have the fondest of memories for it. It's a wonderful city with so many cultures in it. It's an amazing, amazing place.
As many cultures as might be here, we all have the same ideas. Many people who came from other countries, they came for the American dream, and the American dream is a decent job with good health care and a decent paycheck.
Yeah, yeah. That's important to stress that, because, you know, we may have different needs for this and that, but everyone wants to feed their family. Everyone wants to have a nice place to sleep. Everyone wants care for their children and their elders. These are values that we all share, no matter what language we speak, no matter what food we place on our family's table. That's absolutely true. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Is there any final thing you want to leave for my guests, of my listeners?
No, I hope everybody will turn out at Jose Marti Park, 4 p.m. On November 17th, and it's 351 Southwest 4th Street. 33231. And they can go to our South Florida Jobs with Justice Facebook page and get more information. I'll post it tomorrow.
Thanks again.
Okay, thanks again. Bye-bye.
Take care, kid. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okie doke. All righty. I'm going to put on a speech in just a second, but let me put a little bit of music on to lighten the mood, and I'll be right back. Before we get back to the next interview, I want to mention some of our colleagues whose radio shows you should also know about. The Amy Tidd Show, a wonderful activist out of the Melbourne area, does good work all across Florida. And there's a link on our website, newmercurymedia.com. Click on the Amy Tidd Show. It's Saturday at 10 o'clock. It's something you should not miss. Also, Sunday evenings at 6, our good friend Gwen Holden Berry has a fantastic show for activists. called Here Be Monsters. And she and her team have been doing a nightly show every day. They swear they're going to do it as long as Occupy is standing up. So every day at 5 o'clock, Here Be Monsters. There's a link to it on our page. Don't miss it. So Amy Tidd and Here Be Monsters, two shows you should not miss. Amy at 10 a.m. Saturdays, and Gwen 6 p.m. Sunday and 5 p.m. weekdays. Here Be Monsters. Thanks a lot. And I'm going to go over to the question and answer session that Dan Gelber, former senator, held up in Melbourne last week. An excellent presentation. This is his Q&A, largely on the issue of redistricting. So here we go. Dan Gelber from the Melbourne Progressive Voices presentation.
Anybody want to know anything? Max, do you need questions? Sure. Is the legislature
he's taking questions
around
in the audience.
Oh, boy, are they trying to get them. Let me take the status of the amendments 5 and 6, I think you all know this pretty well, but basically what they said is you cannot draw a district that favors an incumbent or favors a political party. You can't draw a district that isn't contiguous. You've got to draw districts that instinctively deal with what you would imagine a district ought to be. Path, but it also has to protect minority interests as well. And that's what the third district amendment did. Essentially, it took out partisanship and the common protection. The Florida legislature, along with two congressmen, have sued to get Amendment 6 invalidated. Amendment 5, they cannot. And it's ironic, but they're suing them. They're suing Amendment 6 deals with federal congressional issues. And I want you to think about this. The Florida legislature, some of the most strident state rights enthusiasts in the world, are arguing that the federal constitution does not allow Florida voters to change or in any way impact the criteria by which the legislature is to draw seats. They're basically making an argument that because of the federal constitution, the Florida legislature is, believe this or not, above the people and the constitution of the state of Florida. And ironically, they're spending your money to prove. They are meeting a lawsuit. The congressman really doesn't have the resources, obviously, of the state of Florida. So the state of Florida is now suing. They lost in the district court. But I was at the argument. And the district judge, who was a Republican appointee, looked at and thought over the argument. And any of you who are lawyers, we all came in, we had our argument, and she said, I'll be right back. She stepped out and came back a minute later and said, okay, none of you really said anything to change my mind. I'm ruling that the third issue comes. It was that simple. And then, if you're a House member here, Dean Cannon is suing. And so he's the one who's leading the lawsuit, and it's really pretty outrageous that he's actually using taxpayer money to sue the state of Florida. The only good news is, because he's suing the state of Florida, this is an absolute winner lawsuit for Floridians, because you are paying for both plaintiffs and defendants.
We have a couple more questions here. Our youngest citizens are tomorrow's leaders. Who is their voice in the quest for protecting funding for public education?
Well, there are a lot of groups out there that are, and let me tell you about public education. I have three kids in public school. And so when I speak about public education funding, I tend to get a little emotional. But it's one of the few issues I do because I see in my own children's lives what these funding cuts do. Florida, so you know, and I find this ironic that the Tea Party folks want Florida to contract its spending. Florida on higher education has the lowest per capita, per person expenditures in the country. And I think for K-12 or something like 43rd%. We spend almost no money comparatively in public education in the state. And it shows in so many ways. You know, I've got a kid who who doesn't, you know, they cut the lab or something, or a teacher calls and says she no longer supplies. And this happens every single day in public school and every single classroom. I don't tell you who's going to be the voice for the it's going to be the parents. It has to be. There's a group in Palm Beach called, there's a group in Palm Beach called Testing Isn't Teaching, which is an amazing group who is basically they could, you know, the Constitution tells you how the Senate and House seats have to be drawn. There's no criteria for congressional. They could have drawn those districts last week if they wanted to. They just choose not to. And what they're doing is the reason why they want to wait so long is when a guy running for Congress or somebody running for House or a woman running for Senate wants to run, they got to know what door to knock. Well, the seats are probably not going to be drawn from July, August, maybe in early. And that's a train wreck because you all would love to get a chance to know who's running. But if you don't, then it just favors the person who's already in elected office. And that's what I think they're trying to do. I think stalling and waiting is just an incredible, incredible injustice to the rights of voters, but it's very good for incumbents who would prefer not to suffer an election.
This actually leads into the next question, which is how will incumbents benefit from the current delays?
That way.
I actually have one of my own that kind of lends into that. Is the feeling currently with the state legislature, is the feeling that what they'll do is they'll basically select their current incumbents and then just draw the district around them? Like, you live here, we're going to draw this district.
I haven't figured, we watch what they do very carefully. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if we can figure out exactly what their plan is. Our goal of Fair Districts is to make sure that they do their job the way the Constitution mandates. We have had to drag them over razor blades, it seems like, for up to this point, but we do not intend to stop. The Federation of groups that were the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, so many others like you all, were really an unbelievable force. And I believe that group is going to continue. Of course, now, instead of millions of voters voting, it will be a dozen or so judges who will be making the decision. But we are going to do everything we can to hold them accountable.
Is there a certain date that the legislature must act on redistricting?
There are a few days. With the congressional seats, there are really no days. They don't have any guidelines to tell them what to do. They just use their own judgment. the House and Senate have to produce their first maps by the close of business of the next legislative session, which will be probably in early March. So we'll get that in March. And then they go to the Supreme Court and it comes back and they don't like it. The legislature then goes to the Justice Department and like that. So you think about March and then you start adding 20, 30 days, four or five times, you end up in July, August. And you're early. So when we talk about the timeline, what we're really saying is there is our belief is that the legislature is purposely trying to hold off on drawing these seats to favor incumbents and to create an election that is chaotic and where voters simply don't have the ability to adequately weigh the candidates, where people don't run because they didn't have an opportunity.
Speaking of which, we have time for one more question. When are you going to run for office again so I can vote for you?
And with that, we'll leave the Dan Gelber question and answer session. I want to thank everyone who joined us tonight. I hope you tune in next week when we're going to have a special guest, a candidate from the Slovenian Congress who is a member of the European Human Rights Commission. He has a wonderful story to tell about fighting for rights in Eastern Europe. And as people in this country work their way back to a true democracy and turn away from an oligarchy where the powerful can just pass public institutions from hand to hand, raid the public treasuries, this is a tale we need to hear. So a special guest brought to us through the good offices of a friend of the show. I know you'll really enjoy next week's show, so make sure you're in. I want to thank you again on behalf of my sponsors, Imagineering Productions and Media Goddess Worldwide, and also remind you that there are other colleagues in the internet broadcast industry you should pay attention to, Amy Tidd and Gwen Holden Berry. Check out our PNN page at newmercurymedia.com/pnn.html. Make sure you click on Amy's link and Gwen's link. Thanks again. We'll see you next week. Hello. Yeah, I was surprised not to hear from Rob. I just spoke to him yesterday and this morning. Oh, well, what you gonna do? Ooh, what you gonna do about me? I am. Oops, hold on. See what... Oh, that's a protest. My computer just decided to start showing. Well, I'm glad that didn't show earlier. No, they would assume that I was doing a man in the street video. I had to fake something about that. Well, did you have a good evening enjoying the brothers? Yeah, very good. Oh boy, I got a call from Rachel, who is Kijewski. Actually, Kayevsky, yeah, the radical, Teresa. Wildly radical. Well, it seems that her and her people, her peeps, I guess, went and disrupted a tea party event in Orlando. So she calls me up and she goes, Rick, I got this action I want to tell you about. You know, can I call in? I said, yeah, sure. I said, now, show's at 7. She goes, oh, 7? I said, yeah, 7. She goes, oh, well, could we maybe do it in the morning tomorrow? I said, yeah, sure, we can do Sunday morning. I'll still have time to edit it and put it out. Well, she doesn't call at 10, she doesn't call at 10:30, she doesn't call at 11. I had a noon meeting down in Palm Beach with a potential client. So I'm like, okay, well, I got to leave, you know, at 12. So she calls as I'm leaving. And I said, well, unfortunately, I can't do it now. She goes, well, how about an hour? I said, no, I'm going to be gone until 4 or 5. I said, why don't you call between 5 and 6? Maybe I can still get it on. She says, okay, well, I'll call between 5 and 6. So she calls at 6:05. Her shit's not quite together yet. And so she goes, well, listen, let me put somebody else on who's more attentive than I am. Oh, my God. There were more ums, ers, uhs. This is going to be a two-hour edit if I actually want to play it, and I'm not sure I want to play it. Because the thing is, I'm for definitely people speaking truth to power. I really am. but I'm not so comfortable with disruption of a meeting. That's over the line for me. And I believe in free speech. I'm an absolute stalwart of free speech. And I would rather have somebody say something stupid than disrupt them, because I want the same right. I want the right to say, speak my mind. So I have to grant the opposite the right to speak their mind too. And I don't care if it's Joe Arpaio. I don't care if it's FBI shill. That's not what I want to do. And so I am at this point disinclined to play the piece. But, I appreciate that. I'm an avid fan of free speech. I just can't get behind. I don't. And then, you know, radical people that are intelligent, that are doing intelligent things, I'm for. Yeah. Well, the other thing that was odd was, I'm all for above board. You know, I'm not interested in saying one thing and doing something else. I'm a firm believer in transparency. And she sent me. She goes, "I want to send you my. I have a press release I want to send you." I said, "Okay." She said, "I probably should send it to you earlier." I said, "Yeah, well, all right, no argument there." So I get it, and the sign off is like LMAC. You should know what that means, or something, you know. Cagey. And you know, don't be cute. You know, it's not cute. It's not cagey. It's not smart. It's not interesting. You know, it's not nothing radical about that. It's just being fun.